hell of his own making. They'll drown him for eternity. That is the punishment for burners in the afterlife, just as flames would be my own damnation. Of course. I dip my head, feeling the cold jewels on my brow. The army will go to Citadel of the Lakes when they arrive, for healing and rearmament. We should be there to meet them. He nods.
We should.
And there is Piedmont to consider, I add. I wasn't in Norda when the lords loyal to Prince Bracken sought Maven's aid. Our countries were still at war then, but the intelligence reports were clear enough. A muscle feathers in Maven's cheek.
Prince Bracken won't fight against Montfort, not while those bastards hold his children hostage.
He speaks like I'm some kind of simpleton. I keep my temper in check, dipping my head. Of course, I reply. But if an alliance could be won in secret, Montfort would lose their base in the south, all the resources Bracken has ceded to them, and they would gain a powerful enemy, another Silver Kingdom for them to fight. His footsteps echo, loud and even over the walkway. I can hear him breathing, exhaling in low, humming sighs as I wait for some answer. Even though we're almost the same height, and I probably weigh as much as he does, if not more, I feel small beside Maven, small and vulnerable. A bird in alliance with a cat. I don't like the sensation.
Retrieving Bracken's children could be a goose chase. We don't know where they are, or how well guarded they might be. They could be on the other side of the continent. They could be dead, for all we know,
Maven mutters.
Our focus should be on my brother. When he is gone, they'll have no one left to stand behind.
I try not to look disappointed, but I feel my shoulders droop anyway. We need Piedmont. I know we do. Leaving them to Montfort is a mistake, one that could end in our death and ruin. So I try again. Prince Bracken's hands are tied. He can't attempt a rescue of his children, even if he knew where they were, I murmur, dropping my voice. The risk of failure is too great. But could someone else do it for him?
Are you offering yourself for the job, Iris?
He clips, looking down his nose at me. I tighten at such a foolish thought. I am a queen and a princess, not a dog playing fetch.
Of course you aren't a dog, my dear,
Maven offers a sneer, never breaking his stride.
Dogs obey.
Instead of recoiling, I brush off the naked insult with a sigh. I suppose you're right, my king. My last card to play is a good one. After all, you have experience where hostages are concerned. Heat flares next to me, close enough that an instant sweat breaks out over my body. Reminding Maven of Mare and how he lost her is an easy way to ignite his temper.
If the children can be found, he growls, then perhaps something can be arranged.
That's all I get from the Kalor King. I consider it a successful conversation. The walls change from polished gilding and turquoise paint to gleaming marble, marking the end of the noble sector and beginning of the royal palace. Arches still dart the way, but they're gated and guarded, a Lakelander soldier in stoic blue at each. More walk the length of the wall, looking down at their queen as she passes. Mother's pace quickens slightly. She's eager to be inside, away from prying eyes. Alone with us. Tiora follows at her heels, not to stay close to Mother, but to keep her distance from Maven. He unsettles her, as he does most people. Something about the intensity in his electric eyes. It seems wrong in someone so young. Artificial, even. Planted. With a mother like his, it very well could be. If she were alive, she wouldn't be allowed in Detron, let alone within striking distance of the royal family. In the Lakelands, her kind of silvers, mind-controlling whispers, are not trusted. Nor do they exist anymore. The Servon line was extinguished long ago, and for good reason. As for Norda, I have a feeling House Mirandus may soon meet the same fate. I have yet to speak to a whisper since I came to Whitefire, And after Maven's cousin died at our wedding, I think he must be keeping the rest of his mother's brood away, if they are still living at all. The Royale, our palace, spirals across the vast grounds of its sector. It has canals and aqueducts of its own, their waters spilling out in fountains and falls. Some arch over our path, carried to the bay, while others run under the walkway. In winter, most of them freeze, decorating the path in icy sculptures no human hand could create. Priests from the temples will read the ice, on feast days and holidays, to communicate the will of the gods. They speak in riddles, usually, writing their words on the land and lakes for only the blessed to see, and few to understand. It takes courage for a burner king of a recently hostile nation to enter the stronghold of the Lakelands, and Maven does it without flinching. Another might think he doesn't have the capacity for fear, that his mother removed something so weak. But that isn't true. I see fear in everything he does. Fear of his brother, mostly. Fear because that Barrow girl is gone and out of his grasp. And like everyone else in our world, he is deathly afraid of losing his power. It's why he's here, why he married me. He will do anything to keep his crown. Such dedication. It's both his greatest strength and his greatest weakness. We approach the grand gates opening on the bay, flanked both by guards and waterfalls. The men bow to Mother as she passes, and even the water ripples a little, tugged by her immense ability. Inside the bay gates is my favorite courtyard, a wide, manicured riot of blue flowers of every kind, roses, lilies, hydrangeas, tulips, hibiscus, petals and shades from periwinkle to deep indigo. At least they should be blue. But like the flags, like my family, the flowers mourn. Their petals are black.
Your Majesty, may I ask for my daughter's presence in our shrine, as is our tradition?
It's the first time I've heard Mother speak this morning. She uses her court tone, as well as the language of Norta, so Maven has no excuse to misunderstand her request. Her accent is better than mine, almost imperceptible. Senra Signet is a smart woman, with an ear for languages and an eye for diplomacy. She stops to survey Maven, turning to face him in a display of common courtesy. It would not do to show a king her back while asking something of him. Even if the request is from me, her daughter, a living person with a will of her own, I think as a sour taste rises in my mouth. But not really. He outranks you. You're his subject now, not hers. You do as he wishes. On the outside, at least. I have no intention of being a queen on a leash. Thankfully, Maven is less dismissive of religion in front of my mother. He offers a tight smile and a shallow bow. Next to Mother, with her graying hair and crow's feet, he seems younger, new, inexperienced. He is anything but.
"We must honor tradition," he says. "Even in chaotic times like these, neither Norta nor the Lakelands can forget who they are. It may be what saves us in the end, Your Majesty."
He speaks well, the words smooth as syrup. Mother shows her teeth, but the grin doesn't meet her eyes. "It may indeed. Come, Iris," she adds, beckoning to me. If I had no restraint, I would take her hand and run, but I have restraint in spades, and I keep an even pace. Almost too slow, as I follow my mother and sister through the black flowers, the blue-patterned halls, and onto the sacred ground that is the Queen's personal temple in the Royale. Adjoining the royal apartments of the monarch, the secluded temple is simple, tucked away among salons and bedrooms. Tradition stands in the usual trappings. A gurgling fountain, waist-height, bubbles away in the center of the small chamber. Worn faces, bland in their features, both strange and familiar, look down from the ceiling and walls. Our gods have no names, no hierarchy. Their blessings are random, their words sparse, their punishments impossible to predict. But they exist in all things, They are felt at all times. I search out my favorite, a vaguely feminine face, her eyes empty and gray, distinguished only by a quirk of the lips that could be a flaw in the stone. She seems to smile knowingly. She comforts me even now, in the shadow of my father's funeral. All will be right, I think she says. The room isn't as large as the other palace temple, the one we use for court services, or as grand as the massive temples in the center of Detraon. No golden altars or jeweled books of celestial law. Our gods require a little more than faith to make their presence known. I lay a hand against a familiar window, waiting. The rising sun filters weakly through thick diamond glass, the panes arranged like spiraling waves. Only when the doors of the sanctum close behind us, locking us in with no one but the gods and one another, do I breathe a low sigh of relief. Before my eyes adjust to the dim light, Mother takes my face in her warm hands, and I can't help but flinch.
"You don't need to go back," Mother whispers.
I've never heard her beg. It is a foreign sound. My voice sticks.
"What? Please, my dearest one."
She switches deftly back to Lakelander, favoring our native tongue. Her eyes sharpen, darker in the shadows of the narrow room. They are deep wells I could fall into and never climb out of.
"The Alliance can survive without you holding it together."
She doesn't let go of my face, her thumbs running over my cheekbones. For a long moment I linger. I see the hope bloom in her eyes, and I squeeze my lid shut. Slowly I put my hands over her own and pull them away.
"We know that isn't true at all," I tell my mother, forcing myself to look back at her face.
She clenches her jaw, hardening.
"A queen is never accustomed to denial." "Don't tell me what I do or do not know."
"But I am a queen too."
"Have the gods told you otherwise?" I ask. "Do you speak for them?"
"A blasphemy. You can hear the gods in your heart, but only priests can spread their words. Even the queen of the Lakelands is subject to such bonds." She glances away, ashamed, before turning to Teora. My sister says nothing and looks grimmer than ever. Quite a feat.
"Do you speak for the crown?"
I press on, putting distance between us. Mother must understand.
"Is this what will help our country?"
Again, silence. Mother won't answer. Instead, she steels herself, shifting into her royal persona before my eyes. She seems to harden and grow taller. I almost expect her to turn to stone.
"She won't lie to you." "Or do you speak for yourself, Mother, as a grieving woman?"
"You just lost Father, and you don't want to lose me."
"I cannot deny that I want you here," she says firmly,
and I recognize the voice of a sovereign, the one she uses in court rulings.
"Safe, protected from monsters like him."
"I can handle Maven. I have been for months now, you know that." Like her, I look to Teora for some kind of support. Her face doesn't change, maintaining neutrality, observant, quiet, and calculating, as a queen-in-waiting should be.
"Oh, I read your letters, yes."
Mother waves a hand, dismissive. Have her fingers always been so thin, so wrinkled, so old? I'm struck by the sight. "So much gray," I muse, watching her as she paces. Her hair gleams in the dim light. So much more gray than I remember.
"I receive both your official correspondence and the secret reports you send, Iris," Mother says. "Neither fills me with confidence. And seeing him now..."
She heaves a ragged sigh, thinking. The queen crosses to the opposite window, tracing the swirls of diamond glass.
"That boy is all sharp edges and emptiness. There is no soul to him. He killed his own father, tried to do the same to the exiled brother. Whatever his demon mother did has cursed the King of Norta to a life of torment. I won't curse you to the same. I won't let you waste your life at his side. It's only a matter of time before his court devours him, or he devours it."
I share that fear with her, but it's no use lamenting choices already made. Doors already opened. Paths already taken.
If only you told me this sooner, I scoff. I could have let him die when those Reds attacked our wedding. Then Father would still be alive.
Yes, Mother murmurs. She studies the window like a fine painting, so she doesn't have to look at her daughters.
And then, if he were dead...
I lower my voice, trying to sound as strong as she does. Like Mother. Like Teora. A queen born. Slowly I move to my mother's side, put my hands on her narrow shoulders. She's always been thinner than me.
We would be fighting a war on two fronts, against a new king in Norta and the Red Rebellion that seems to boil all over the world.
In my own country, I curse in my head. The Red Rebellion began with our borders, under our noses. We let their rot spread. Mother's eyelashes flutter, dark against brown cheeks. Her hand covers mine.
But I'd have you both. We'd still be together.
For how long? My sister asks. Teora is taller than us and surveys us down the length of her arched nose. She folds her arms, rustling the blue and black silk. In the cloistered, small temple, she seems statuesque, towering next to the gods themselves.
Who's to say that path doesn't end in more death? She says.
In all our bodies at the bottom of the bay. You think the Scarlet Guard would let us live if they overthrew our kingdom? I don't.
Neither do I mumble, laying my forehead against our mother's shoulder.
Mother?
Her body stiffens beneath my touch, muscles coiling tight.
It can be done, she says flatly. This knot can be untangled. You can still stay with us, but it must be your choice, mon amour.
My love. If I could ask one thing of Mother, it would be to choose for me, to do as she has done for me so many thousand times. Wear this, eat that, say what I tell you. I begrudged her wisdom then, how she or my father would take the responsibility from me. Now I wish I could cast it away, put my fate in the hands of the people I trust. If only I were still a child, and this were all a bad dream. I look over my shoulder, searching for my sister. She frowns at me, heartsick, and offers no escape.
I would stay if I could.
I try to sound like a queen, but the words tremble.
You know that, and you know deep down that what you ask is impossible. A betrayal of your crown. What is it you used to tell us?
Teora answers as Mother winces.
Duty first. Honor always.
The memory warms my insides. What lies ahead isn't easy, but it's what I must do. I have purpose in that, at the very least.
My duty is to protect the Lakelands as well as you do, I tell them. My marriage to Maven may not win the war, but it gives us a chance. It puts a wall between us and the wolves at the door. As for my honor, I have none until Father is avenged.
Agreed, Teora snarls.
Agreed, Mother whispers, her voice a shadow. I stare over her shoulder at the face of the smiling god. I draw strength from her smirk, her confidence. She assures me.
Maven, his kingdom, they're a shield, but a sword too. We have to use him, even though he's a danger to us all.
Mother scoffs. Especially you. Yes, especially me.
I never should have agreed, she hisses. It was your father's idea.
I know, and it was a good one. I don't blame him. I don't blame him. How many nights did I spend alone in Whitefire Palace, awake and telling myself I felt no remorse, no anger at having been sold like a pet or an acre of land? It was a lie then, and a lie now. But my anger at such things died with my father.
When all this is over, Mother says.
Teora cuts her off.
If we win.
When we win, Mother says, spinning on her heel. Her eyes flash, catching a spangle of light. In the center of the temple chamber, the curling fountain slows its motions, the steady fall of water easing in its journey. When your father is bathed by the blood of his killers, when the Scarlet Guard is exterminated like so many overgrown rats. The water stops, suspended by her fervor. There will be little reason to leave you in Norta, and even less to leave an unstable, unfit king on the throne in Archeon, especially one who is so foolish with the blood of his own people and ours. Agreed. My sister and I whisper in unison. With even motion, Mother turns her head to the frozen fountain, shaping the liquid to her liking. It arcs in the air, like a glass complexity. Light plays off the water, splitting into prisms of every color. Mother doesn't flinch, unblinking against the flash of sun. The Lakelands will wash clean those godless nations, conquer Norta and the Rift, too. They gnaw at each other already, sacrificing their own for such petty rivalries. It won't be long until their strength is spent. There will be no escape from the fury of the line of Signet. I have always been proud of my mother, even when I was a child. She is a great woman, duty and honor personified, clear-eyed, unyielding. A mother to her entire kingdom, as well as her children. I realize now I didn't know the half of it. The resolve beneath her still surface, as strong as any storm. And what a storm it will be. Let them face the flood, I say, an old promise of judgment, the one we use to punish traitors, and enemies of every kind. What of the Reds, the ones with abilities in the mountain country? They have spies running through our own kingdom. Fiora furrows her brow, cutting a canyon in her skin. I want to smooth away her infinite cares, but she's right. People like Mare Barrow must be accounted for. They're part of this, too. We're fighting them, too. We use Maven against them, I tell Teora. He has an obsession with new bloods, the Lightning Girl especially. He'll pursue them to the ends of the earth if need be, and spend all his strength doing it. Mother nods in grim approval. And Piedmont? I did as you said. Slowly I straighten, proud of myself. That seed is planted. Maven needs Bracken as much as we do. He'll try to rescue the children. If we can win Bracken to our side, use his armies instead of our own. My sister finishes for me. The Lakelands can be preserved, our strength gathered and waiting. Bracken could even be made to turn against Maven. Yes, I say. If we're lucky, they'll all kill each other long before we show our true selves. Teora clucks her tongue. I put little stock in luck when your life hangs in the balance, Petasore. Little sister. Though she says the word with love, meaning no disrespect, it still makes me uncomfortable. Not because she is the heir, the eldest, the daughter meant to rule, but because it shows how much she cares and how much she will sacrifice for me. Something I don't want from her, or my mother. My family has given enough.
It must be you who rescues Bracken's children, my mother says, her voice sullen and cold.
Her eyes match her tone.
A daughter of Signet. Maven will send his silvers, but he won't go himself. He doesn't have the skill or stomach for such things. But if you go with his soldiers, if you return to Prince Bracken with his children in your arms...
I swallow hard. I'm not a dog playing fetch. I told Maven that only minutes ago, and I almost say the same to my royal mother.
It's too dangerous,
Teora says quickly, almost stepping between us. Mother holds her ground, unflinching as always.
You cannot leave our borders, T. And if Bracken is to be swayed, to us and us alone, we must be the ones to help him. Such is the Piedmont way.
She clenches her teeth.
Or would you rather Maven do it and win himself a staunch ally? That boy is dangerous enough alone. Don't give him another sword to wield.
Even though it wounds me, both my pride and my resolve, I see reason in her words. If Maven is the one to lead, or to order a rescue of the children, then Maven will certainly win Bracken's allegiance. That cannot be allowed.
Of course not, I answer slowly. It must be me, then. Somehow.
Teora concedes, too. She seems to shrink. I'll have my diplomats make contact, discreetly as they can. What else do you need? I nod, feeling a numbness in my fingers. Rescue Bracken's children. I don't even know where to start. The seconds drag as they pass, more difficult to ignore. If we stay in here much longer, the Nortons will get suspicious, I think, biting my lip. Maven especially, if he isn't already. My legs turn to lead as I back away from Mother, my hands suddenly cold without her warmth. As I pass the fountain, I run my fingers in the arcing water, wetting the tips. I draw the liquid over my eyelids, smudging the dark makeup on my lashes. False tears roll down my cheeks, black as the morning flowers. Pray, T, I tell my sister. Trust the gods if you will not trust luck. My trust in them is absolute, she replies, mechanical, automatic. I'll pray for us all. I linger at the door, one hand on the simple knob. As will I. Then I pull, popping the bubble around us, ending what could be our last moments of security for years to come. Under my breath, I mumble to myself, will this work? Somehow Mother hears me. She looks up, her eyes inescapable as I back away. Only the gods know.
5. Mare. The drop jet feels sluggish on the air, heavier than usual. I sway against my safety restraints, eyes lidded. The motion of the craft, paired with the comforting buzz of electricity, has me half asleep. The engines chug calmly, despite the extra weight. More cargo. I know. The hold is filled to the brim with the spoils of Corvium, munitions, guns, explosives, weapons of every kind. Military uniforms, rations, fuel, batteries, even bootlaces. Half is going to Piedmont now, and the rest is on another jet, returning to Davidson's Mountains. Montfort and the Scarlet Guard are not wasteful in their endeavors. They did the same thing after the Whitefire attack, stripping what they could from the palace in such limited time. Money, mostly hauled out of the treasury once it was clear Maven was beyond our reach. It happened in Piedmont, too. It's why the southern base seems empty, in the lodgings, in the administrative buildings once meant for grand war councils. No paintings, no statues, no fine plates or cutlery. None of the trappings great silvers require. Nothing but what is necessary. The rest was pulled apart, sold, repurposed. Wars are not cheap. We can only maintain what is useful. That's why Corvium crumbles behind us, because Corvium is no longer useful. Davidson argued that leaving a garrison of soldiers was foolish, a waste. The fortress city was built to funnel soldiers into the choke to fight Lakelanders. With that war ended, it has little purpose. No river to guard, no strategic resources, just one of many roads to the Lakelands. Corvium had become little more than a distraction. And while we held the city, it was deep in Maven's territory and too close to the border. The Lakelands could sweep through without warning, or Maven could return in force. We might win again, but more would die. For nothing more than some walls in the middle of nowhere. The Silvers opposed. Naturally, I think they must be honor-bound to disagree with anything someone with red blood says. Annabelle argued the optics. How many dead? How much blood spent on these walls? And you want to give up the city? We'll look like fools. She scoffed, glaring across the council chamber. The old woman looked at Davidson like he had two heads. Cal's first victory! His flag raised! I don't see his flag anywhere. Farley interrupted, dry as bone. But Annabelle ignored her. She pressed on, seeming like she might obliterate the table beneath her fingers. Cal sat silent at her side, his eyes ablaze as he stared at his hands. "It will look like weakness to abandon the city," the old queen said.
"I care very little for how things appear, only for how they are, Your Majesty," Davidson replied. "You are very welcome to leave a garrison of your own to hold Corvium, but no soldier of Montfort or the Scarlet Guard will remain here."
Her lip curled at that, but any retort died in her throat. Annabel had no intention of wasting her own army in such a way. She slid back in her seat and turned away from Davidson, her eyes flitting toward Volo Samos. But he wouldn't volunteer his own soldiers either. He kept silent.
"If we leave the city, we leave it in ruins."
Tiberius clenched his fist on the table. I remember that clearly, his knuckles bone white beneath his skin. There was still dirt under his fingernails, and probably blood, too. I focused on his hands, so I wouldn't have to look at his face. His emotions are too easily read, and I still want no part of them.
"Special contingents from each army," he said. "Lerolan Oblivions, the New Blood Gravitrons, and bombers. Anyone who can destroy. Strip the city of resources, then turn it to ash and wash away whatever's left. Leave nothing Maven or the Lakelands can use."
He didn't look up as he spoke, unable to hold any gaze. It must have been difficult to order the destruction of one of his own cities. A place he knew, a place his father had protected, and his grandfather before him. Tiberius values duty as much as tradition, both ideals planted bone deep. But I had little pity for him then, and have even less now as we hurtle toward Piedmont. Corvium was nothing more than the gate to a red graveyard. I'm glad it's gone. Even so, I feel unease deep in the pit of my stomach. Corvium still burns behind my eyelids, its walls crumbling, torn apart by explosive bursts, the buildings ripped away by manipulated gravity, the metal gates twisting into snaking knots. Smoke races the streets. Ella, an electrocon like me, used her own storm to strike the central tower, furious blue lightning cracking stone. Montfort nymphs, new bloods of great power, used the nearby streams and even a river to sweep rubble away to the distant lake. No part of Corvium escaped. Some of it even sank, collapsing into the tunnels beneath the city. The rest was left in warning, like ancient stone monoliths weathered by a thousand years instead of a few hours. How many other cities will share the same fate? First, I think of the Stilts. I haven't seen the place where I grew up in almost a year. Not since my name was Marina, and I stood on the deck of a royal ship, eyeing the banks of the Capitol River with a ghost at my side. Ilara was alive then, and the king, too. They forced me to watch as we passed my village, its people gathered at the water's edge under the open threat of a whipcrack or cell. My family stood among them. I focused on their faces, not on the place. The Stilts was never my home. They are. Would I care now if the village disappeared? If no one was harmed, but the Stilt houses, the market, the school, the arena, if it was destroyed, burned, flooded, or simply gone? I really can't say. But there are certainly places that should join Corvium in ruins. I name the ones I want to destroy, cursing them. Greytown, Marytown, Newtown, and all the rest of their like. The techie slums remind me of Cameron. She sleeps across from me, jostled in her restraining belts. Her head lulls, her snore almost indistinguishable over the sound of the jet engines. From underneath her collar, her tattoo peeks out, black ink against dark brown skin. She was marked with her profession, or rather her prison, a long time ago. I only saw Tech Town from a distance, and the memory still makes me gag. I can't imagine growing up in one, bound to a life in smoke. The red slums must be ended. Their walls must burn, too. We land at the Piedmont base in a late morning downpour. I'm drenched after 3 steps across the runway, heading for the line of waiting transports. Farley outpaces me easily, eager to get back to Clara. She has a mind for little else, bypassing the colonel and the rest of their soldiers as they move to greet us. I work to keep at her heels, forced to move at an uneasy trot. I try not to look back at the other jet, the silver one. I hear them over the rain, trooping out onto the paved field in all their style. The rain darkens their colors, muddying Larilan orange, Jaycos yellow, Kalor red, and Samos silver. Evangeline smartly abandoned her armor. Metal clothes aren't exactly safe in a thunderstorm. At least King Volo and the rest of his silver lords haven't followed us here. They're on the way back to the Kingdom of the Rift, if they haven't arrived already. Only the Silvers going on to Montfort tomorrow made the journey to Piedmont. Annabelle, Julian, their various guards and advisors, as well as Evangeline and, of course, Tiberius. When I get into my transport, sliding into the dry interior, I catch a glimpse of him, brooding like a storm cloud. Tiberius stands apart, the only one of them familiar with the Piedmont base. Annabelle must have brought more courtly clothes for him. It's the only explanation for his long cloak and polished boots and the finery underneath. At this distance, I can't tell if he has a crown. Despite the royal clothing, no one would mistake him for Maven. Tiberius's colors are reversed. The cloak is blood red, as are his clothes, all trimmed with black and royal silver. He glows through the rain, bright as any flame. And he stares, dark brows furrowed, unmoving as the storm opens above us. I feel the first crack of lightning before it splits across the sky. Ella was holding it back to let the jets land. She must have let it go. I turn from the transport window and lean against the glass. As we speed off, I try to let go of something too. The row house ceded to my family looks the same as it did when I left a few days ago, albeit very wet. Rain lashes the windows, drowning flowers in their window boxes. Tramie won't like that. He dotes on those flowers. He can grow as many as he likes in Montfort. He can plant an entire garden and spend his life watching it bloom. Farley gets out of the transport before it fully stops, her boots splashing through a puddle. I hesitate for many reasons. Of course I have to talk to my family about Montfort, and hope they agree to stay there, even when I leave again. We should be used to it by now, but walking away never gets easier. They can't stop me from doing it, but I can't stop them either, if they refuse to go. I shudder at the thought, knowing they're safe is the only sanctuary I have left. But that inevitable argument is a dream compared to what else I have to admit. Cal chose the crown, not me. Not us. Saying it makes it real. The puddle outside the transport is deeper than I thought, splashing up the sides of my short boots, sending a cold chill over my legs. I welcome the distraction and follow Farley up the steps to an opening door. A blur of barrows pulls me inside. Mom, Gisa, Tramie, and Bree whirl around me. My old friend Killorn joins the mix as well, stepping in to give me a short but firm squeeze. I feel a burst of relief at the sight of him. He wasn't ready to fight in Corvium, and I'm still glad he agreed to stay behind. Dad hangs back again, waiting to hug me properly without anyone else worming in. He might have to wait a long time since Mom doesn't seem too concerned with letting me go. She drapes an arm across my shoulders, pulling me close. Her clothes smell fresh, clean, like a dewy morning and soap. Nothing like home in the stilts. My status in the army, whatever it is, affords my family a level of luxury we were never accustomed to before. The row house itself, a former officer's quarters, is opulent compared to our old stilt home. Though it is sparsely decorated, the essentials are all finely made and well cared for. Farley only has eyes for Clara. While I'm barely through the front door, Farley already holds Clara against her chest, letting the baby girl rest her head on her shoulder. Yawning, Clara nuzzles, trying to return to her interrupted nap. When she thinks no one is looking, Farley dips her neck, pressing her nose against Clara's tiny head of brown hair. She shuts her eyes and inhales. Meanwhile, Mom plants another of a dozen kisses on my temple, grinning. "Home again," she murmurs.
"So they really did it," Dad says. "Corvium is gone."
I untangle myself from Mom long enough to give him a proper hug. We're still unaccustomed to touching this way, without my father huddled in his wheelchair. Despite his long months of recuperation with the aid of Sarah Skonos, as well as the healers and nurses of the Montfort Army, nothing can erase the years we all remember. The pain is still there, sitting in his brain, and I suppose it should. Forgetting doesn't feel right. He leans on me, not as heavily as he used to, and I lead him into the sitting room. We share a bitter smile, a private one that passes only between us. My father was a soldier once too, longer than any of us. He understands what it is to see death and return from it. I try to imagine who he was, beneath the wrinkles and the scraggly whiskers fading into gray behind his eyes. We had few photographs at home. I don't know how many made it to the refuge on Tuck Island, then to the other base in the Lakelands, and then here. One of them sticks out in my memory. An old scrap of a picture, worn at the edges, fuzzy and faded in the image. My mother and father posed for it a long time ago, before even Bree was born. They were teenagers, kids of the stilts like I was. Dad must not have been 18. He wasn't conscripted yet, and Mom was just an apprentice. Dad used to look so much like Bree, my oldest brother. Same grin, his mouth almost too wide, framed by dimples. Thick straight eyebrows across a high forehead, ears that could be a little too big. I try not to think of my brother's aging like my father has, subjected to the same pains and worries. I can make sure they don't share our father's fate, or Shade's. Bree flops into an armchair near us, crossing his bare feet on the simple rug. I wrinkle my nose. Men do not have lovely feet.
"Good riddance to that heap," Bree says, cursing Corvium.
Tramie bobs his head in agreement. His dark brown beard continues to fill in.
"Won't miss it,"
he agrees. Both of them were conscripted like Dad. Both of them know the fortress well enough to hate its memory. They trade smiles, as if they've won some kind of game. Dad is less celebratory. He eases himself down into another chair, stretching out his regrown leg.
"Silvers will just build another. It's their way. They don't change."
His eyes flash, finding mine. My stomach drops when I realize what he's trying to say. My cheeks burn at the implication.
"Do they?"
Shamed, I look back at Gisa, searching her quickly. Her shoulders droop and she sighs, barely nodding. She picks at the sleeve of her shirt, avoiding my eyes.
"So you've heard," I say, my voice flat and empty.
"Not everything," she replies.
Her eyes dart to Kalorn, and I'm willing to bet he tipped everyone off, relaying the less painful parts of my message last night. Nervous, Gisa twists a lock of hair around her finger. The dark red strands gleam. But enough to figure it out. Something about another queen, a new king, and Montfort, of course. Always Montfort.
Killorn's lips twist, pursing together. He runs a hand through his choppy blonde hair, mirroring Gisa's discomfort. There's anger, too. It simmers in him, lighting up his green eyes.
"I can't believe he said yes."
I can only nod.
"Coward,"
Killorn snaps. He clenches a fist.
"Idiot, coward, wasteful, spoiled brat, bastard. I should break his jaw."
"I'll help," Gisa mutters. No one scolds them, not even me.
though Killorn certainly expects it. He glances my way, surprised by my silence. I hold his gaze, trying to speak without saying the name. Shade gave his life for our cause, and Tiberius can't even give up the crown. I wonder if Killorn knows my heart is broken in two. He must. Is this what it felt like when I pushed Killorn away? When I told him I didn't feel the same? That I couldn't give him what he wanted? His gaze softens with pity. I hope he doesn't know what this feels like. I hope I didn't put him in this much pain. It's just not in you to love me, he said once. Now I wish that weren't true. I wish I could save us both from this agony. Thankfully, Mom puts a hand on my arm. A light touch, but enough to guide me to the long sofa. She doesn't say anything about the Kalor Prince, and the glare she shoots around the room communicates her point. Enough. We got your message, she says, her voice a little too loud and bright as she forces the change in subject. From that other new blood, with the beard, to here, Gisa offers as she sits down next to me. Killorn hovers behind us both. You've decided on resettlement for us. Even though it's what she wanted, I don't miss the sharp edges to her tone. My sister blinks at me, one eyebrow raised. I sigh aloud. Well, I'm not making decisions for you, but if you want to go, there's a place for you all. The Premier said you'll be welcomed with open arms. What about everyone else? Tremi asks. He narrows his eyes as he perches on the arm of Bree's chair. We're not the only ones evacuated here. He catches an elbow in the side and doubles over as Bree snickers. Thinking about that clerk? What's her name with the curly hair? No. Tremi grumbles back, his golden cheeks flaming beneath his beard. Bree tries to poke at his flushed face but gets swatted away. My brothers have a terrific talent for acting like children. It used to annoy me, but not anymore. The normalcy of them is soothing. It will take time. I can only shrug. But for us, Gisa scoffs aloud. She tosses back her head, exasperated. For you, Mayor, we're not silly enough to think the leader of the Republic wants to do us a favor. What does he get in return? With nimble fingers, she grabs my hand, tightening her grip. What does he get from you? Davidson isn't silver, I say. What he wants, I'm willing to give. And when do you get to stop giving things? She snaps back. When you die? When you end up like Shade? The name drops a hush over the room. At the door, Farley turns her face, hiding in shadow. I stare at Gisa, searching my sister's pretty face. She's 15 now, settling into herself. Her face used to be rounder, her freckles less numerous, and she didn't have the cares she has now, just the usual worries. It used to be little Gisa we relied on, her skill, her talent, her ability to save our family. Not anymore. She doesn't begrudge the loss of that weight. But her concern is clear. She doesn't want it on my shoulders either. Too late. Gisa, Mom says, her voice a low warning. I recover as best I can, pulling my hand away. My spine turns to steel. We need to request more troops, and Premier Davidson's government has to approve before they can be sent. I'll help present our coalition, show them who we all are. Make a convincing argument for the war against Norda and the Lakelands. My sister is unconvinced. I know you're good at arguing, but you aren't that good. No, but I'm the crossroads, I say, dancing around the truth of it. Between the Scarlet Guard, the Silver Courts, the New Bloods, and Reds, too. I'm not lying, at least. And I've had enough practice putting on a good show. Farley balances her baby in one arm, putting her other hand on her hip. She drums a finger against the holster of the pistol glued to her side. Mare's trying to say she's a good distraction, Where she goes, Cal follows. Even now, when he's trying to win back his throne, he's coming with us to Montfort, and so is his new betrothed. Behind me, I hear Calorn suck in a hissing breath. Geesa is just as disgusted. Only they would stop to arrange marriages in the middle of a war. For another alliance, right? Calorn sneers. Maven did it already. Locked up the Lakelands. Cal needs to do the same. So, who is it? Some girl from Piedmont? Really cement what we're doing down here? It doesn't matter who she is. My fist clenches in my lap as I realize that I'm lucky it's Evangeline, a girl who wants nothing to do with him, another chink in his flaming armor. And you're just going to let this happen? Calorn paces out from behind the sofa, his long limbs making even strides. He glares between Farley and me. No, excuse me, you're going to help? Help Cal fight for a crown no one should have. After everything we've done? He's so upset, I almost expect him to spit on the floor. I keep my face still, impassive, letting him fume. I can't remember him ever being so disappointed in me. Angry, yes, but not like this. His chest rises and falls rapidly as he waits for my explanation. Farley does it for me. Montfort and the Scarlet Guard won't fight two wars, she says evenly, emphasizing the words, conveying a message. We have to take on our enemies one at a time. Do you understand? My family seems to tighten in unison, their eyes going dark. Dad especially. He runs a thumb along his jaw, thoughtful, as his lips press into a thin line. Killorn is less subdued. Green fire sparks behind his eyes. Oh, he murmurs, almost smiling. I see. Bree blinks. I don't. No one is surprised, Tramie mutters under his breath. I lean forward, eager to make them all understand. We aren't going to give the throne to another Silver King, at least not for long. The Calor brothers are at war, spending their forces fighting each other. When the dust settles, Dad drops his hand on his knee. I don't miss the tremble in his fingers. I feel it in mine, too. It will be easier to deal with the victor. No more kings, Farley breathes. No more kingdoms. I have no idea what the world could look like, but I might soon, if Montfort is everything I've been promised. If only I still believed in promises. We don't bother trying to sneak out. Mom and Dad snore like trains, and my siblings know better than to stop me. The rain hasn't let up, but Killorn and I don't mind. We walk down the row house street without speaking, the only noise coming from our feet squelching through puddles as the storm rumbles in the distance. I can barely feel it anymore, as the lightning and thunder spiral away toward the coast. It isn't that cold, and the well-illuminated base keeps out the darkness. We don't have any real destination. No direction but forward.
He's a coward,
Killorn mumbles. He kicks at a loose pebble. It skitters away, spreading ripples across the wet street. You said that already, I reply, along with a few other things.
Well, I meant it.
He deserves every word. Silence drags over us like a heavy curtain. We both know this is strange territory. My romantic entanglements aren't exactly his favorite subject, and I don't want to inflict any more pain than I already have on my closest friend. We don't have to talk, he cuts me off, putting a hand on my arm. His touch is firm, but friendly. The lines between us are clearly drawn, and Killorn values me enough to never cross them. He might not even feel the same as he did before. I've changed so much in the last few months. It's possible the girl he thought he loved is gone. I know what that's like, too. To love someone who doesn't really exist.
I'm sorry, he says. I know what he means to you.
Meant, I growl, trying to push past him.
but his grip tightens. No, I didn't make a mistake. He still means something to you, even if you won't admit that.
It isn't worth the argument.
Fine, I admit it.
I force through clenched teeth. It's dark enough that he might not notice my face turning scarlet.
I asked the premier. I mumble. Killorn will understand. He has to understand.
I asked to keep him alive.
When the time comes, when we turn.
Is that weakness?
Killorn's face falls. The harsh streetlights illuminate him from behind, giving him a halo. He's a handsome boy, if he isn't already considered a man. If only my heart fell to him instead of someone else.
I don't think so,
he says. Love can be exploited, I guess, used to manipulate. It's leverage. But I would never call loving someone else a weakness. I think living without love at all, any kind of love, is weakness. And the worst kind of darkness.
I swallow thickly. The tears don't feel so immediate anymore.
When did you become so wise? He grins, shoving his hands in his pockets.
I read books now.
Do they have pictures? Barking a laugh, he starts walking again.
You're such a kind person.
I match his pace. That's what I hear, I reply, glancing up at his lanky form. His hair is soaked through now, darker in the wet, almost brown. Killorn could be shade if I squinted. Suddenly, I miss my brother so much, I can barely breathe. I won't lose anyone else the way I lost Shade. It's an empty promise with no guarantees, but I need some kind of hope. I need some kind of hope, however small it may be.
Will you come to Montfort?
The words blurt out of me, and I can't bite them back. It's a selfish request. Killorn doesn't have to follow me around everywhere I go, and it's not my place to demand anything of him. But I don't want to leave him behind again.
His responding grin erases any trepidation I might have.
Am I allowed? Thought it was some kind of mission.
It is, and I'm allowing it.
Because it's safe, he replies, eyeing me sidelong.
I purse my lips, searching for an answer he might accept.
Yes, it is safe, or the closest thing we have to safe. It isn't wrong to want him out of danger.
Killorn brushes my arm.
I get it, he continues. Listen, I'm not about to storm a city or shoot jets out of the sky. I know what my limitations are and how many I have compared to the rest of you.
Just because you can't kill someone with a snap of your fingers doesn't make you less than anyone else.
I fire back, almost electrified with sudden indignation. I wish I could list all the wonderful things about Killorn, all the important things he is.
His expression sours.
Don't remind me.
I grab his arm, nails digging into wet fabric. He doesn't stop walking.
I'm serious, Killorn, I say.
So you'll come?
I'll check my schedule.
I dig my elbow into his side and he jumps away, forcing an exaggerated frown.
Stop it. You know I bruise like a peach.
I elbow him again for good measure, both of us laughing as much as we dare.
We continue on quietly, lapsing into an easy silence. This time it isn't so stifling. My usual worries melt away, or at least step back for long moments. Killorn is my home too, as much as my family. His presence is a pocket of time, a narrow place where we can exist without consequence. Nothing before, nothing after. At the end of the street, a figure seems to materialize from the rain, shedding drops of dark and light. I recognize the silhouette before my body has time to react. Julian. The gangly silver hesitates when he sees us, only for a second, but it's enough time for me to know. His side is chosen, and it isn't mine. Cold bleeds through me, from fingers to toes. Even Julian. As he approaches, Killorn nudges me. I can head back, he whispers. I glance at him briefly,
drawing strength from him. Please don't. His brows knit with concern, but he nods curtly.